This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome. We're going to call this the MQFF show. It might be a one-hit wonder. We'll discover some of the highlights of the 2012 Melbourne Queer Film Festival. And I'm Danae. I'm joined by Lisa Daniel, Festival Director. Lisa.
Morning. Midday. Hello. Morning, afternoon. It's 1:01, so that's officially afternoon.
Some people
it
might
feels like it's 5 a.m. to me. I might look like it's 5 a.m. too.
Some people might be expecting the Joy 94-point news, but there is none. So we are
There's festival news.
Yep.
That's much more important than whatever Kay Rudd's doing or Julia's not doing or who's fighting with who and, you know, that whole political soap opera palaver.
It is a bit of a soap
opera. Let's take a break from that. Let's talk about films.
Well, one of the golden rules of radio is never ask your guests how they are, but I'm going to ask, how are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. I'm clinging on to the back of a very fast-moving train as hard and as securely as I can, because now that tickets are on sale, you just kind of keep up with it. So, and tickets are selling well. In fact, I think we've only got about 150 opening night tickets left. So,
well, the Melbourne Queer Film Festival launched the program on Wednesday. Today is Friday, as far as I can tell.
It is.
So tickets went on sale yesterday.
Yeah, pretty much yesterday morning, although a few eagle-eyed punters got onto the website around about midnight on Wednesday night, just after launch, and there was a few purchases then, so good on them.
Well, that's that social media element of the world now. You can.
True.
I've seen photos of the launch. I've seen tweets and posts and all sorts of things. So people are buying tickets. We'll talk more about some of the highlights of the festival a little bit later.
Should we give dates? I suppose we should give dates.
Sure.
So given the launch was like 2 days ago, we're about 2.5 weeks out from the festival, March 15 to March 25, with our secret Back by Popular Demand on March 26. Oh, not a secret anymore. So we're still a couple of, you know, 2 weeks out from the fest, and we're selling really well. So, you know, don't dilly-dally.
No, people often think that that's a bit of spin, don't they?
They do, you know, actually, like, but then they come crying to me later saying, have you not got anything for opening night? No.
What are the reasons that you can't sell 8,000 tickets?
Well, we have had a change in venue this year. So we have moved from the Astor that literally had about 900 seats in it. And we have now gone to Acme, which has got about 560. So anyone with a little bit of mathematical skill will see the little shortfall there, which is not, you know, look, it's not great for a not-for-profit to have less tickets to sell, but we are very appreciative of the City of Melbourne for looking away for about 15 years as we held our opening night in another city, which I will not name now.
No.
But it wasn't the City of Melbourne. So, we, you know,
it's a change.
It's been time. There's a terrible lack of good venues in Melbourne in terms of good size.
Do you mean Melbourne, like, right in the CBD?
Yeah, City of Melbourne, so CBD. So anything within the City of Melbourne borders, very, very difficult in terms of good size venue. We need something around about 1,000, maybe 1,200. Just doesn't exist. And, you know, there are theatre venues, but they're always booked out years ahead and they don't have proper projection facilities and all that sort of stuff. So Acme it is. So we're interlocking both the cinemas and using both of those, but it still only takes us up to about 560. So, so you really, you know, you really do have to get in early. It will sell out. I reckon it'll sell out by sort of early next week.
So in case you're listening to us on the Joy 94.9 iPhone app or online, we'll try to keep the acronyms to a minimum today, but we will talk about MQFF because it's a little bit shorter than the Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Yes.
And ACME.
Yes, ACME is the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, which of course is just off Federation Square.
Which is fantastic, right, which is where we will have the opening night on the 15th of March and then 10 days of around 162 films. films.
Yes.
91 Sessions. That. So we today, Lisa and Danae, will be talking about some of the highlights, because there is such a lot during the festival. And a couple of filmmakers will join us, one on the phone. And shortly we'll be talking with Grant Sikluna.
Yeah, he's had an exciting ride recently.
It's the MQFF show. And you just heard a little of The Wilding. We have the filmmaker in the studio. Grant, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
You're really not really very well, are you? Surely you've just been travelling.
Yeah, I feel like Scheiser. I've been over in Berlin with my film, The Wilding, and just got back yesterday. So I'm feeling a little under the weather, but I'm here.
Yeah, well, we're very happy to have you here. Lisa, you're going to take over this bit because I'm sure you've got heaps of questions for Grant.
I've always got questions for Grant. Now, look, tell us, how was it? Were you over there for the whole festival? Did you get to opening night and the whole Teddy extravaganza and everything else associated with Berlin that
Absolutely.
I missed out on?
Indeed, yes. We got there from day one. We were in a program called Generation, which is, you know, at Berlin Film Festival is so massive. It's got so many parts to it. And so our section was a section called Generation, which is films about young people. And we went to opening night. We went through to, you know, our four or five screenings, red carpet premieres, and then leading up to the Teddy Awards, which is such a massive dance party, one of the biggest gay parties in Berlin. And they give awards to and nominees to the queer films in the festival.
Yeah.
So we were.
So how many times did The Wilding screen across the fest?
We had five screenings. So we had two Teddy screenings and we had three Generation screenings.
Right. Okay. And do you get to speak at those screenings and do Q&As or anything like that? Or are you involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So we get up and do Q&As, and a lot of the audience with Generation screenings are kids, so you know, kids over the age of 14.
Yep.
And so sometimes they have quite interesting questions. And and then the Teddy screenings, we got up and did Q&As and talked about, you know, the politics of making queer films. And
what was the reception like for the film?
Really good, really good. The audience really got it. We were at first kind of surprised that we'll put in a program for teenagers, really, but then when we got there and we saw all the other films that they programmed in the Generation, and we certainly were not, and we're a hard-hitting film, we were certainly not the most hard-hitting film in the program, so the kids in Germany are very sophisticated.
Yeah.
And the response from the queer audience was fantastic, so we've had a lot of people come up to us from festivals, queer festivals around the world, and we've got sales agents interested now. So
brilliant. Do you want to give us a little rundown of what the film's about?
The Wilding is it's set in a juvenile detention center, and it's about a boy called Malcolm who is given a chance at parole, but his boyfriend is being picked on, and so long as Malcolm can just keep his nose clean and not get into any fights anymore, then he'll be able to sort of get out of there. But the more he sees his boyfriend get picked on, the harder he finds it is to just not do anything to protect him. So he's really in a position where he has to choose between his freedom and doing something about the bullying.
Based on your own personal experience?
No.
So where did the story come from?
I'm working on a feature film which is kind of set in that world.
Right.
And Screen Australia really liked the film and they put us through a springboard program where they said, can you write a short film which is kind of similar to the feature? It might have different characters, but same feel, same issues. And they gave us the money to make the film. So really it came out of my feature film.
In terms of the funding, and this might be useful information for other filmmakers, would you advise younger up-and-coming emerging filmmakers that making a short or writing a short is a good stepping stone to making something longer in a longer form?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still the way to, you know, developing a career as a director and as a writer or producer is to work through shorter films. And I do think it's a really good idea if you've got a plan for a feature film or if you know a kind of genre that you want to work in to do a short which is in that same vein, because if the short is very successful, people inevitably turn around and say, well, you know, what are you working on next? What do you want to do next? And if you've made a comedy and you actually want to do some psychological drama, well, there's a kind of schism there that people don't get.
Yeah.
So I think it's really useful.
Yeah, we do see a few films through the festival that that are now features that did start out as shorts, which is quite interesting. You know, sort of they come back about 3 years later. Debs is a good example. It's a, you know, pretty popular feature film that started out as a short. And there's quite a few examples. So often my advice to filmmakers is to, you know, concentrate on the short form first and then, you know, sort of work your way up there and try and get the funders interested through that avenue.
Mm, that's right. I mean, hopefully with the success of The Wilding, we might be in a position to be making my feature in the next couple of years.
So how many shorts have you made?
I kind of lose count.
That's a good thing.
And some I prefer not to think about. So
understand.
I've been making shorts over about the last 8 years, from, you know, when I was a student and until now. And I feel like The Wilding is kind of the culmination of all of that. So hopefully The Wilding is the final short, and I'd be looking at being able to do longer stuff from here.
Yeah. Are you interested in television at all?
Yes, I am. I'm interested in, you know, we make great adult drama. Mm. That's, yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
If somebody wants to take a chance on a
Any listeners director. Out there working in telly, Grant's talented.
I'm here. Call
Can
me.
I ask a highbrow question, Grant?
I'll try to answer it.
So I looked at your CV a little and it said you were, let's see, a credit for Dead 20-something number 2 in the film Noise. Yep. So your acting history?
Yeah, that was pretty much the beginning and end of my acting.
Literally says Dead 20-something number 2, not even number 1.
No, I wasn't even number 1. So at the start of Noise, there's a massacre on a train and I'm one of the victims.
Excellent work. I think we'll play a little of Grant's short film, The Wilding. Thank you for talking with us, Chukas. Lisa, will you have more questions?
Yeah, if Grant's happy to stay for a minute, we'll just talk about what's coming up in terms of the festival dates and Grant's film and, yeah.
Spooky. You're listening to the MQFF show on Joy 94.9, and that is a little more of The Wilding. And our guest Grant is talking about that. So the soundscape seems to be really important in this.
Yeah, I mean the sound design and the music, it's kind of quite spare, and then at particular points in the film, it's really the sound just really gets you in the guts. I hope, especially when it's played loud.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
Lisa, our festival director, has programmed this as one of the 162 films during the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. You have some more questions for Grant, I'm sure.
Well, I did want to say when it's screening and where it's screening. It's actually screening in the Oz Shorts package, which is the City of Melbourne Emerging Filmmaker Award, which is the prize-winning award. It's like the highlights of the Australian stuff. So there's about 8 films in that session, and The Wilding is one of those. And the prize for that is $3,000 cash. So I want to ask you how you would spend that if you did indeed win. I think it'll be pretty hotly contested. But I was interested to know how you fell into filmmaking. Is this something you wanted to do since you were a little kid, or something you sort of fell into accidentally?
It really is something I wanted to do since I was a kid. But really it was storytelling when I was a kid. So I was always writing, and I was always the precocious brat that would write really long stories when all of my friends were writing 3-sentence ones. And I thought I was really smart. And then from there, it kind of just twisted into filmmaking. You know, my parents bought a camera and it's that same old story. And I just started, you know, shooting little stop motion animations at home, and it just is something I've always just kept up.
Yep. Yeah, fantastic. So what's next for you? Are you going to travel more with The Wilding? I imagine that other festivals will now pick it up, because I know a lot of my festival colleagues were over in Berlin. They kept taunting me with the fact that I wasn't there. So I know that it will be screening probably for the next year or so at festivals overseas. Will you get to travel with that, do you think?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, that would be a dream if we could, I'd love to go to North America somewhere with it, throughout Asia. It would just be really fantastic to be able to travel with the film. It's hard from Australia because we're so far away.
Yeah,
but
it's so expensive, yeah.
Yeah, we just try to make it happen. But what I'm up to at the moment, I'm writing. So, as well as directing, I write, and I'm doing another draft of my feature, which hopefully is the final draft, and then we'll move into shooting it.
Fantastic. So funding, any funding in place? Do you need funding?
Yeah, we do need funding. There's no real funding locked in, but we've got people already saying that they want to see this draft. So
yeah, fantastic.
That'll be next.
Do you entertain private funding and that sort of thing, or do you pretty much stick to the structured film body funding?
I can really only talk about in terms of the short films, and I've made three which have been financed through funding bodies, and then the rest have been private or, credit card films.
Yep.
And then I did make one film which was crowdsourced, which is, calling on friends and friends of friends to put in $2, $20, $50, and it all adds up.
Yep.
And made a film called Colin the Dog up in Sydney.
Right.
That way. So, you have to do what you can to...
Yeah. Did you do the crowdsourcing through an official way, like through website crowdfunding, or did you just do it, sort of privately, just putting the word out to your friends through Facebook?
It was a bit of both, but we certainly did have a proper, there's a crowdsourcing website called Kickstarter, and we had our page up there, and raised the money that way.
Yeah, it's a fantastic thing for filmmakers to be able to do that.
Grant, thank you for talking about The Wilding. Good luck with the screening.
Thank you.
Shall we throw out some hashtags or handles or anything that so that people can follow what is happening with The Wilding? Have you got a Facebook page?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us facebook.com/The Wilding or thewilding.com.au.
And I recommend that. It's 23 past 12 on a Friday, and Leo's helping us out, Lisa and Danae, talking with Grant about The Wilding, and we're going to be chatting with one of the producers of a documentary called The Cure up shortly. We are calling this the MQFF show because it's the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, starts on the 15th of March and was launched this week. Lisa Daniel is the festival director, and, we can give you the credit or the blame for curating the program.
Yeah, speak to me after March 26. I'll decide whether I should leave the country or whether I should hang around.
There's a lot of film there. Short films, feature films, documentaries. We talked with Grant about The Wilding, which is a short film in the Oz Shorts package on the second weekend. And we're about to talk to a film producer. I'm pretty impressed by that role. I think it sounds like a lot of hard work. It does sound smart. Helen Kelly has worked with Heather Corkill on The Cure. Are you there, Helen?
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for joining us on Joy 94.9. Lisa's going to ask you all the really intelligent questions about producing a documentary.
Now tell me, how is the screening? Is there a screening up in Sydney this week?
That's right, yes. The Cure will make its premiere this weekend at the Mardi Gras Film Festival.
Fantastic. Is that the world premiere?
That's right. We do like to say that term quite a bit at the moment. It's very
I know, it's pretty cool, isn't it? So we're getting the Melbourne premiere on the 24th of, March.
Which
would be great.
So it's not about the rock band, is it?
No, and a word of the wise to all up-and-coming filmmakers, make sure you Google the title of your film before you decide about pitching it everywhere.
But, oh, really? Why? Yeah. Tell us what happened.
Well, we just, we kind of spontaneously came up with the name way, way, way back in the research stage, and it just sort of stuck, and we didn't really think about it, and we plugged ahead, and we realised that people were latching on to the title as a means of finding us on the internet, and then we realised that it would be pretty hard to find us because we're buried amongst all things relating to the band. So, that was probably our first major mistake. But we've managed to recover somewhat since then.
Well, let's hope that you sort of, by far outstay the band. The film might be around for decades. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what the film is about?
Sure. The Cure is an exploration of reparative programs, more commonly known as ex-gay programs in Australia. And particularly we wanted to look at the mental health implications of trying to change one's sexual orientation or identity. So essentially the film explores the story of six main protagonists who have all undergone different kinds of reparative therapy in an attempt to reorientate their sexuality. Five of those people had no success, and one man believes that he has undergone a transformation from homosexual to heterosexual.
Now, he's the guy that runs his own ministry, is that correct?
That's correct. He runs Living Waters.
Living Waters, that's right, yeah.
That's right, and they are probably the major player in reparative programs in Australia, if you exclude online programs. But
right. Yeah. And have the participants seen the film yet?
Yes, we have had the opportunity to show most of our participants the film. You know, it was a difficult process for all of them, obviously, and particularly some of them are still very close to that experience. It's not so much in the distant past for them, so I think it was pretty difficult, but they're all, you know, incredibly supportive of what we're doing, and they're very courageous people, all of them, so we really appreciate, you know, the time and energy they've put into it.
And what about the guy from Living Waters? What was his response?
Ron hasn't seen the final cut yet. As a part of, we found it very difficult to encourage someone essentially from the other side of the fence, someone who is sort of promoting ex-gay programs and is a supporter. We found it really hard to get somebody to actually come on camera and speak with us.
Yep, I can imagine.
So one of the conditions that we agreed to was that they had the right to review footage before we went to editing,
mm-hmm.
And they had an opportunity at that point to withdraw anything that they weren't comfortable with. So that's the stage that Ron's seen. He's seen all of his interview. He's aware of, you know, what could possibly make it into the film, and he was comfortable with that, and that's where we're at with him.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating because, you know, that other side of the story really makes the film have that sort of breadth that you need to have two sides of the story, really, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it was absolutely our intention when we set out not to make an aggressive film that was about demonising anybody. We really just wanted to explore the issues at hand and try and understand for ourselves why anybody would want to submit themselves to this kind of really intense emotional, you know, psychological kind of program. The fact that Ron was prepared to come on camera and speak with us was our ultimate goal. We absolutely wanted to try and present both sides of the story so the audience has an opportunity to make up their own mind.
Yeah, you've done it really well. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
How did you come up with the idea to do the film in the first place? Is it a personal journey for you and Heather?
No. Actually, we were inspired by an 8-minute piece that was screened on Hungry Beast that really briefly just looked at the fact that these programs exist in Australia, and we were all really quite shocked. We thought it was a very, you know, much more of an American thing. We didn't realise that it was actually taking place in modern day Australia. We started talking about it, and we were just really fascinated. We're at the Brisbane Queer Film Festival, actually, at the Powerhouse there, just sitting around having a chat about this really fascinating piece and just saying, we just want to know more about this. We want to explore this more deeply. We really feel like there's so much more to tell, and we just started looking into it. And then one thing led to another, and the next thing we know, we're filming at Mardi Gras with the Freedom to Be group marching, you know. So it was just a natural progression that just kept rolling on.
And it seems to have come full circle if you're part of the Mardi Gras Film Festival this weekend.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And we do have the great honour of being screened at the Brisbane Queer Film Festival as well, so in April. So it absolutely will come full circle for us at that moment as well.
Fantastic. Helen, thank you for chatting with us about The Cure. If you put The Cure documentary into your search engine, Helen's right, you might get a bit of Robert Smith, but you'll also get something about this great documentary that'll be screening at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival on the 24th of March.
That's right,
correct.
Yep.
And a bit of a Q&A as well, and straight after. So we're screening the film, and then we're going to have a Q&A with, I think, Heather.
That's right, yes.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you so much.
The MQFF 2012 show, presented by proud media partner of Melbourne Queer Film Festival, Joy 94.9.
And it's already halfway through. We will be available as a podcast or 17 podcasts. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work because I haven't asked my friend Leo to help us out. I'd like to thank him for helping out on the panel today. I'm Danae, and the festival director, Lisa Daniel, is here.
I am.
And hashtag MQFF22 if you'd like to follow us on Twitter. Lisa's going to introduce our final guest for this hour.
We have sitting with us on the desk, filmmaker, actor extraordinaire, Ian Merton.
I was looking around the room thinking, who on earth is she talking about?
Yes. Now, Ian has a film in the Oz Shorts as well, so he'll be up against Grant, who I see is lying wounded out in the green room there. So they'll be competing against each other for the $3,000 cash prize in the City of Melbourne Emerging Filmmaker Best Oz Short.
Yes. Can I be emerging filmmaker at my age? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah,
he certainly can.
I know, at 25, it's probably a bit past being emerging. Now,
yes.
Tell us a little bit about the film.
Well, my film is a very... my idea to begin with was to make like a visual poem. So it's actually a silent film, basically. Mm. I mean, it's got music, obviously, and there are some sound effects, but there's no dialogue. And this
is that
came
because you couldn't think of anything to write, or
no? It's actually it started because I was laying down some old films, Super 8 films that I made for a friend of mine. I made films with him when we were kids at school, and I wanted to give him copies on DVD. And I started watching these films that we made when we were 15, 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And of course, in those days on Super 8, there was no sound. Unbelievable, true. I know, and they were in sepia as well. No, but there was no sound. So I was looking at this going, and now that's what filmmaking is about, telling stories with pictures. And that was where I then thought, I'm going to go back to where I started. I'm going to try and make a film where I strip away all dialogue, because I'd actually just finished writing a feature script, which is such a talk fest. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, that's crazy. Okay, this is not filmmaking. This is like a play now. It's got so many words. So I thought, no, I'll go back to telling a story with just pictures. So that's where it started.
Cool.
So it's a story about...
You know what? I get a lot of filmmakers asking for advice about making films and making a short and, you know, what is the ideal length for a short and that sort of thing. And I always give them the advice of watching ads, because ads tell a lot of a story in 30 seconds. Mm. And I think you've gotten onto something really good in that you can tell a lot of story without dialogue in film, because you're showing, not telling. You don't need to spell it out as such.
It's amazing that aren't done that way, because one thing the whole MTV generation has taught us is that so many stories get told in like 3 minutes.
Mm.
And, you know, quite complicated stories sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just with musical accompaniment. Mm. And I would have thought that the logical step for a lot of young filmmakers who are making music videos would be to go, but it's like as soon as they get away from that genre, they go, okay, now we're going to talk.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have dialogue, and now it's going to be real acting, not just miming. It's like, you can do it. And it's amazing to me that, of course, what's going to win all these Golden Globes or Oscars, what has won Golden Globes?
Is the silent film.
Is a silent movie.
Yeah. So what's Echo about?
Oh, Echo is about, it's about a middle-aged gay man, who may or may not look a lot like me, who is recently had a major bereavement, and he's starting to question where he is in his life, how old he, you know, what he's lost, what he's gained, where he is, and he meets a young man who reflects, in a sense, to him where he was, and what he is now. How he's going to embrace the future, how he's going to move forward, and this traveler, this person passing through his life, helps him to kind of kickstart his life again.
So where did the story come from?
Well, it mostly came from me losing my father a few years back, and also a very dear friend to whom my father and this friend Scott, the film is dedicated to them. Scott was my age, and he died very suddenly. And I was privileged enough to actually be the person who found him.
Mm.
So it was quite an intense experience. And then also, much at the same time, I was performing in a play with a young actor who'd never performed in a play before, even at school. He'd never done a play before. And I found myself watching this guy and going, oh, my God, that's where I was. How brave is this kid? And he's brave because he doesn't know what I know. And he was just fearless taking on this role. And I thought, man, I wish I was back there. And then, but you can't. You can't go back.
So, the more you know, the less risks you're likely to take.
Exactly.
Do you think that's right?
I think it can be. That's where you can easily fall into that.
Yeah.
So, if anything, you know, like a lump at this film is me going, okay, this is just, I'm just going to take a risk. I'm going to put myself out there. And I have really put myself out there because I've written it, produced it, directed it, starred in it, did some of the additional photography, and also I've been involved in writing the music for it. So if it sucks, I'm dead.
So how are you going to feel about seeing yourself on the very large screen at Acme?
Oh, I can
tell
you've
seen yourself before, but this, you're much more exposed here.
I'm very exposed here. Good thing I went to the gym, hey?
You're a fit-looking guy.
Tried to, because I'm up against one magnificent-looking specimen, the beautiful Ryan Stewart, who's not only a spectacular-looking young man, but also an incredibly fine performer and a great person. And it was such a privilege to have him on the project, and he was so generous and so easygoing and so professional. He was just a breath of fresh air.
So what do you hope to achieve with the film? Like, what, you know, do you want to, you know, sell it to a distributor? Do you want to screen it at other festivals? Do you want to maybe get some TV interested? Do you want to use it for funding for future projects?
I think probably two or three of those. One is I would love it to see it in a few different festivals around the world. One of my favorite experiences was my last film was going to a festival with it in Los Angeles. And that was just so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And to be in Hollywood, seeing your film on a huge screen in front of hundreds and hundreds of people who are all industry people. You know, that's the whole of the audience basically are in the industry. And that was an amazing experience. And I'd love to be able to do that again. I'm hoping it that my agent might think it's a useful sales tool for me as an actor. And I also hope that I will be able to use it to get people interested in my next project, which may or may not be a feature. Maybe.
Now, your experience goes back a long way in the industry. Ooh, more as an actor.
Yes.
Tell us a little potted history about your acting.
Oh, man. Well, I actually started pretty much straight out of school. I started working at Crawford Productions. And then I joined the Melbourne Theatre Company Youth Theatre. And out of that, I got my first screen role in one of Australia's, one of the earliest, the start of the industry, The Devil's Playground, back in 1975 with the brilliant Fred Skepsey.
At the age of three.
Yes. He played an embryo in The Devil's Playground.
I Googled a bit, you know.
That's a great film.
It is a good film. Mm. It still stands up really well. Mm. And that was just the most fantastic experience to have as your first director. Fred Skepsey, man, that was unbelievable. Yep. So,
is he still in your phone book? Still in touch?
No, I don't.
Come on,
he is, unfortunately. Oh, you know, he travels backwards and forwards in New York. Yeah. He's in LA. Yeah. But that was my start, and then I basically got an agent from that and did guest roles in television for the next, I don't know, little bits and pieces, lots of commercials. I must say I've been very fortunate with commercials over the years.
I do see your face popping up every so often when I'm eating my dinner.
Sometimes.
The Melbourne Storm ad was one of my favourite pieces of your work. That's fantastic.
Being tackled by a nun.
It was great. It was a fantastic ad.
And then the one with the elephant, which was pretty good, which is for Viagra, actually.
Oh.
Not that we were allowed to say that.
Okay, moving right along. Ian, thank you so much for coming in to Joy 94.9 to talk about your short film as part of the Oz Shorts package, which I'm very excited about, Lisa. I think it's I haven't seen them, so I'm looking forward to them, but it's always one of the highlights of Melbourne Queer Film Festival, I think, to see the quality of the material in the short version. I like a short film. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Hi, this is Katie Lang, and you're listening to Australia's first and only lesbian and gay radio station, Joy 94.9.
The MQFF 2012 show, presented by proud media partner of Melbourne Queer Film Festival, Joy 94.9.
Who's this? Who's this? Who is this?
What?
K.D. Lang. This is K.D. Lang. Jesus and H. Christ.
He's very young, Stella.
That's no excuse.
She's obsessed.
I am not obsessed.
Yes, you are. You want her. Maybe you should marry K.D. Lang.
Well, don't think I wouldn't.
Pretty sweet.
Sweet my ass. Savory. Delicious. If I were on death row, I'd request
My final meal be right between K.D. Lang's legs.
That's Olympia Dukakis. And it's actually the cleanest part of Cloudburst that I could find at short notice, Lisa. It's the opening night film.
It is. And two greater actresses for those roles you would not find, Olympia Dukakis and Brenda Fricker. Both Oscar winners, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think
at
so.
At least nominated. I know
no,
Brenda
no,
Fricker.
They are.
Yeah, yeah, I thought
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that is, Olympia's role is one saucy role. Like, she
sure
swears her way through this film, and Brenda just, you know, they're stealing each other's scenes, basically. But Cloudburst is a fantastic film. It's a Canadian film made by Tom Fitzgerald, who film lovers would know from titles like Beefcake, The Hanging Garden. He's made a lot of sort of, most of his stuff is gay. Like, he mostly works in sort of the queer film industry. A very accomplished filmmaker. I'm not sure why he's not more famous than he is. I mean, most people know who he is, but he's, you know, I feel like his work is so polished and accomplished that he should be more famous than he actually is. So he's a great filmmaker, and he's just gone right off his usual gay story with, you know, a story about two elderly lesbians played by Olympia and Brenda, who have been together for many decades, living a quiet life, and Brenda Fricker's granddaughter decides that Brenda needs to be in a nursing home.
Mm.
So she puts her in a nursing home, and Olympia famously breaks her out one night, and they're in the States, and they go across to Canada to try and get married, and I won't tell you too much more, but it's a little bit Thelma and Louise meets I don't know what. But
is there a pretty Brad Pitt type
there's a very spunky looking boy in the film that ends up hitchhiking with them, and he's a great guy. He's a dancer, so but it just becomes more and more hilarious, and you know, it's a funny film, and you know, the both roles are fantastically played, but it does have a serious side. It has a little bit of a message about equal marriage, but it doesn't hit you over the head with it. So I thought it was a really fantastic film for opening night, because I can't imagine anybody not liking this film.
Yeah.
I know it's, you know, probably a bit of a risk if you just nut it down to the basics and say we're having an opening night film that's about two elderly lesbians. Most of the gay community would probably just shriek and run away, but look, I have faith that people know who Olympia Dukakis is, and,
sure,
and you know, I just think it'll be a fantastic way to kick off the festival.
And when you say elderly lesbians, they really are. Olympia is literally 80 years old now.
Yes.
What a superstar.
You know, yeah, she's amazing. And, you know, of course, they play elderly roles. They're not, you know, made up to be 50 or something.
Yeah.
They're actually playing their age. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what people think. You know, I can't imagine anyone not liking it. So I think it's a great way to kick off the festival with a little bit of a message about equality, because we do have the focus on activism in the festival. So it does have that little link. And you know what? It's the kind of film that might have been a bit hard to sell within the program. People might just go, elderly lesbians, not interested.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, I'm being a bit, you know, I'm stereotyping and being a bit silly about it. But, you know, I do think that if we can actually have it on opening night and kind of almost force people into seeing it, they'll thank us later.
Well, these are the things that you have to consider as part of your role,
I
guess.
Yeah, opening night's a really hard gig to curate, because, you know, you're trying to please a lot of people, different genders, different, you know, different tastes, and so it's always difficult.
Before we go through some of the panels and other things that are happening during the festival, let's swing to the closing night. What's that film?
Yeah, it's a complete turnaround from the opening night. It's a US film called Leave It on the Floor, which is kind of like Paris is Burning for the, you know, it's 2012 audience.
Mm.
So it's set in, you know, kind of ballroom clubs in LA. It's a gay film, trans characters, fantastic music, really, really good dance. Beyonce is choreographer. Is responsible for a lot of the dance stuff in it.
Sure.
Yeah, it's got a story. It's not just a dance film, but, you know, it's a fantastic way to end the festival. I think we're having a dance performance, a closing night party. Maybe I've just told a secret that I shouldn't have, but that's all I'm saying.
You like that.
So it's written by a guy called Glenn Gaylord, who many film buffs would know from Eating Out films. He made a film a couple of years ago. He's made films that we've had in the festival before. He's actually coming out as well. His sister lives in
coming
Melbourne.
Coming out, isn't he gay already?
Yeah, he's coming out to stay as well.
Oh,
his sister lives in Melbourne, so she's American. And so he's coming out to introduce a session and spend a few days at the festival.
Leave It on the Floor. Sort of like Paris is Burning 2012 style. So if you don't know Paris is Burning, then you really...
You need to come and see this.
Yeah, you need to see this.
Yeah. So Glee has inspired a lot of musical, dancey films, which is good.
It's good.
It's good. Nice.
It's good. There's short films, documentaries, features, and there's also panels. Talk to me about what the panels are about.
Yeah, we do have a bit of a focus on activism. So we've got five different special presentations during the festival. So we've got panels on things like evil marriage, Corey Earlham, Jamie Gardner and Paula Gerber. Dr. Paula Gerber will be talking about what the latest legalities are, which could all change next week.
Exactly.
You never know what's going to happen. We've also got a trans panel. We got this great film on a trans panic murder, which is a bit gruesome, mm-hmm. that happened in the States. And it's just struck me that I didn't know, and I know a lot of trans people here don't really know much about the trans panic and trans laws and, you know, the hate crimes and that sort of thing. So we've got a solicitor called Brian Walters and Sally Goldner, of course, Melbourne's probably most famous trans activist, and Sim Kennedy, who are going to talk about a little bit about the legalities of the trans panic defence. Does it exist here? Who
can
use it?
State of play.
State of play. What else we got? We've got Grant, who we heard earlier, is actually going to speak on a panel about filmmakers as activists.
Mm.
You know, what sort of attitude change can they engender with their films? You know, are they just entertaining, or are they, you know, trying to enlighten and educate as well? And we've also got a panel with Federal MP Adam Band and Daniel Whithouse on basically chatting about the difference between individual activism versus more formal organisational activism. So I think that'll be fantastic as well.
We could talk about the serious stuff all day. In fact, we're not allowed to talk about much more because our time is almost up. But there is a Joy sponsored session at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival number 22, which is called the Lesbian Space Alien... No, Codependent.
It's called Codependent Lesbian Space Alien Seeks Same.
It's a classic.
Quite long and it's hard to say very fast.
I was going to play a little bit of music, but seriously, it just sounds sci-fi and weird and a little bit wonderful. So can you give us a quick summary on that one, Lisa?
Yeah, if you think in 1950s black and white, crazy kind of cheaply made sci-fi. So we're talking, you know, you can see the little lines in the background. And I think at one stage the girl, one of the aliens is wearing like a plastic cups on her ears as if they're, you know, some kind of highfalutin kind of headphone thing. So, look, it's a fantastic film, really dry, New York-style sense of humour, but hilarious. I can't wait to see it with a crowd. Again, I saw it in San Francisco and we all screamed with laughter.
Yeah, it's going to be a Joy sponsored session. So stay tuned. You'll hear all about it.
Definitely something for the boys and the girls, that one.
Don't miss the smorgasbord of international queer film favourites at this year's 22nd Melbourne Queer Film Festival, March 15 to 25. See mqff.com.au for full program details, ticket outlet info and secure web bookings. Tickets selling fast. Joy 94.9 is a proud media partner for MQFF 2012.
The MQFF 2012 show, presented by proud media partner of Melbourne Queer Film Festival, Joy 94.9.
Time's almost up for the MQFF show.
Wow, that went really quickly.
Didn't it?
I could bang on about Queer Film Festival all day.
Yes, but you've got to go back to work and sell some tickets.
Yeah, I've got to do some ticketing.
What's the easiest way to get on?
I would go to mqff.com.au and jump online. It's fully secure, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, buy your tickets there. Very, very easy ticketing system. If you want to get them in person, you can pop down to Hares and Hyenas and Acme in the city at Federation Square. Easy peasy.
And that's where the party that will go with the Codependent Lesbian Space Alien Seeks Same on Saturday the 17th of March. Joy and MQFF putting on that film.
And Joy put on a cracker of a party last year, so I've got high expectations, people.
No pressure. No. Hashtag MQFF 22. And you can check us out on the website because we'll be updating all that stuff. And I believe there's an app around the corner.
It's very close, yes.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that one. Lisa, you wouldn't have much to do now, would you? You're the festival director.
With a cocktail this afternoon and a bit of a sleep or something.
Isn't there footy on tonight?
No. Oh, look, I'm shipping now. I'm doing shipping and ticketing and doing all sorts of stuff, so it's a bit of a blur, really.
Well, thank you for coming to Joy and talking about the 22nd Festival, which it starts on the 15th of March. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.